Today, we're sitting down with Maura Walker, who owns a small business in Massachusetts called Pies by Maura. Maura and I have worked together for several years now, and I have been consistently impressed with how her business has grown and matured in such a short period of time. Maura is a former deli owner turned pie baker, operating her wildly successful cottage bakery out of her home with zero employees. Today, we're talking with Maura about how she built her business, the hurdles she's faced along the way, how networking has helped her streamline and grow her business in a way that works for her and her family, and how she's using smart production planning and strategic automation to operate her business in a sustainable fashion for a solopreneur. I hope you find this interview as inspiring as I did. Thank you so much, Maura, for sharing your wisdom with all of us today. Let's get to the interview. From Bakery Business Academy, welcome to the Kitchen Notes Podcast, a show for bakers and food entrepreneurs who want to build profitable bakery businesses that make an impact in their communities. We're your hosts, Meg and Molly Sveck. All right. Good morning, everybody. I'm here with Maura from Pies by Maura. And she is here to talk to us about her business today. So good morning.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Thank you for agreeing to do this, Maura. She and I have known each other for a few years now. She originally took my pricing course back in probably 2020 or 2021, a couple of years ago at least. And I wanted to bring Maura on the podcast today because she has such a unique business model that I really admire. And I thought you guys could really benefit from hearing from her today. So thank you for agreeing to do this. Yeah. Why don't we start off? Maybe you could just tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and what your business is.
Okay. So my name is Maura Walker, and I live in Swansea, Massachusetts. And I have had a few businesses, delis, serving breakfast and lunch. And at one point, I've sold both, you know, had them, sold them, and then done other jobs. But I've always made pie. And I had a roadside stand outside my mother-in-law's house, and it was on a fairly busy road, busier than what I am on. And so when I sold my last business, I continued. Every weekend, I would bake, and I had an honor box, and I would bake whatever I felt like baking. Initially, just started with pies, but then I got into cookies and muffins and cupcakes and all kinds of stuff. And I would put it out on the stand on the weekend, and people would buy. It was just like pretty amazing. And I actually furnished a lot of my house with my...
Wow.
I would save that money. That was like my incentive if I needed a new rug or whatever. Like I would work for, you know, for that. I mean, I had a regular job, but I would just do this on the side.
And that was like your extra.
Right. So
you know, for people who don't know, back up a little bit. I'm amazed that you did this with an honor box. And if people have never been like out in the country driving around, can you kind of like explain what this is, what this phenomenon is?
Well, my husband made me a plant stand actually, and did a lot of planting with, you know, flowers and seed starting. And then when I decided to do the pies, we just would wheel that out. And he put a wooden box that he nailed to the potting bench and put a lock on it. And people would just drop their money in. And I would get sometimes notes from people, I'll be back to pay you. I didn't want to miss out, you know, so if I don't get that, you know, I'll put it in tomorrow or, you know, whatever. So it was kind of funny. And I did get burned once or twice, but I had been doing it for years. And people just thought that it was like really cool that this is actually the way I did this. And it just, I don't know, it just worked.
Yeah.
It just worked. I didn't really think about it. And I didn't really think that somebody would steal from me because I would never steal from anybody, especially if you're baking it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's yeah, wonderful. It was kind of, yeah. And I did it for, I did it for a long, long time. And then my mother-in-law passed away and we had the house empty for a while and I would continue to do it then. And then it, you know, when we sold the house, actually the people we sold the house to said, oh, you can still keep the stand in front of
them. Oh, that's nice.
And I had other neighbors offer to have, you know, to let me keep a stand in front of their house. But I didn't because I just didn't want to impose on people, you know. So anyway, fast forward a little bit. I did pies always at the holidays out of my house. You know, Thanksgiving was a big, big one. And Christmas as well. And I mean, some of the people that I continue to bake for now, I have probably been baking for, you know, 30 years.
Yeah. So you built your customer base. Was it a lot of these people knew you from the deli or did they come along?
Some people knew me from the deli. Some, and I didn't have social media. Uh-huh. So at the time, they knew me from the deli. You know, they just lived in the neighborhood. People that would be driving by, word of mouth. Yeah. I mean, it was just amazing. And we had I live on the Coles River in Swansea, which opens up into Narragansett Bay. This is a little more, but on the other side is this community called Tewissett Point, and it's in Warren, Rhode Island, because we are literally a stone's throw from the Rhode Island border. Uh-huh. And people would come to vacation, you know, come down to their houses on the weekend or whatever. And so they would stop. And so they became a lot of my customers and people. I had people who were riding by on bicycles that would stop. Yeah. I mean, it was just, you know, it really was, you know, when I think back on it, it was really kind of neat that I was able to do that. And it was a lot of fun. And it was great for my kids when they were young because they used to love to get involved in it all. And my mother-in-law was widowed and she was in her 90s and she loved it.
Yeah.
You know, because she was peeking out the window and she'd be out talking to people. And
it's like such a thrill.
Right. It just worked for everybody. It just worked for everyone. So anyway, when she passed and I, you know, stopped the stand, my husband had somewhat of a personal woman's, you know, story. I was in my late 50s. My husband had a real health scare and I thought, what am I going to do? Like, how am I going to take care of myself? What am I going to do? The kids were grown out of college. And what am I going to be when I grow up? And I truly, truly struggled with how I am going to take care of myself. Mm-hmm. And my oldest sister had passed away several years. She passed away before my mother-in-law did. She had a cerebral hemorrhage and she died. So I ended up, she would always say to me when I would discuss anything about finances, she would say to me all the time, Maura, just keep making pie. Just keep making pie. And so I heard that voice in my head when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up. Just keep making pie. So I started to think about a pie business. And I just can remember I kept saying to God, just put my feet in the right direction. And like, you know, I'll run with that. I just need to know what direction to go in. And all the time I would hear my sister Liara saying, just keep making pie, just keep making pie. So I looked into how to even start a pie business. I had other businesses, but they were brick and mortar. And my father was an attorney and he used to help me out with everything. So now, you know, he's gone and here I am having to be a big girl all by myself at 57. You know? So I just started talking with people and I would go to farmers markets and had decided that I wanted to do a farmers market. And I don't even know how I found out about this one market because it wasn't close by. And I went to, they were new, I guess it was, and they were starting. So I went to it and I met this wonderful girl who I'm still friends with today. And she kind of walked me through the process and like what I needed to do. And I have found that people have been who are, you know, it's like that camaraderie, mm-hmm. you know, she was just wonderful.
So she told you about like the health laws and the packaging and all that.
Right. And she shared with me, you know, like what she uses, you know, what she uses for packaging, even what kind of flour that she was buying and where she was buying it. And come to find, I mean, she had told me the type of flour that she was using, which was a King Arthur Special Select, but that's not good for pie. I found that out. You know, it did not make very good pie crust. And then King Arthur has a helpline.
I always forget about that. That's right.
I have called them numerous times.
It's like the Butterball line, but for King Arthur.
Absolutely. But you can call them about just about anything, you know, that to do with baking. Yeah. And they're a great resource. So I would, you know, I've called them, you know, many times. So I get into a couple markets that my first season, you know, had to take the syrup safe and all of that stuff, because when I was in business before, there was no syrup safe. The whole, you know, and I guess I had permits and stuff, but my dad took care of all that. So
yeah.
So now I had to do all of that. So I'm into a couple markets, and they were good markets. I was just delighted that, you know, I couldn't give up my day job, but I was delighted that people were receptive to what I was selling. And after the first year, you know, you talk to other people, they're like, oh, you should check out this market because they don't have a pie person.
Yeah.
So I did. I been into different markets the following year.
Just through networking and talking to people.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. It's just, and you would just ask other vendors, what markets are you in? How are those markets? Do they have a pie maker?
You know?
And so I ended up with two markets that I'm still with currently, who have been phenomenal markets for me. No pie makers, you know. So one is in Plymouth, Mass, where the Plymouth Rock is.
Yeah.
So, and another one is in Hingham, and that's just an affluent community.
Yeah.
I was only, and they're about, both of them are about an hour from here. And I was only initially able to get into Hingham once a month, and now I'm there every other week and could be there, you know, more if I chose to, but this is kind of has always worked for me. I like rotating, and I like having, it keeps people coming, you know, when are you going to be here? And then I always know that I have orders. So I have, and I've been in, I was doing three markets. Now I've cut back a little, you know,
so I think
I am a one man show.
Right. Know? And we're going to talk about that too, which it's amazing to me that you make as much pie as you do just being just one person. But that's incredible.
I have to tell you what really changed my business for me is I took a course one winter up at King Arthur, mostly because I wanted to go, and it was on pies, but mostly because I really didn't expect to like learn a lot because I had been making pie, but I just wanted to get away all by myself.
Okay. Yeah. Like a vacation, excuse to get away.
Right. So I went up there and we, you know, they did different pastries. And one of the pastries that they did was this cheddar pastry that we made hors d'oeuvres with it.
Uh-huh.
So then I come home and the wheels are turning and I'm trying to figure out how I can make this dough into a hand pie or something.
Yeah.
So I worked with the dough, made them everything. The butter melted out. I chilled it. The butter still melted out. So I ended up freezing the hand pies and I baked them off from a frozen state. That totally changed my business.
Because you realized I can bake from frozen.
Right.
Yeah.
And I never bake anything from frozen. Mm-hmm. I don't freeze my pie. At that point, I didn't freeze pie crust. Now I'll freeze like bottom crust. But there are things that I like to bake and go to a market. Everything is fresh. It's been made. I get up during the middle of the night and people are getting a fresh product. But these savory hand pies, I started out making a couple. Now I have like 10 different kinds that I rotate through. And in the summer, you know, I'll sell 250 a week, which
that's insane.
It's crazy. I will spend Monday just making hand ties.
Yeah. But that lets you, that type of like production planning lets you do this at scale, even though you're one person, because you come up with a method that, that works for you and works for your product.
Right.
So that's a transformation.
Yeah. It, I mean, it was such a game changer for my business. It brought more people in. I mean, the financial, it was like, I was like, okay, this is covering my everything.
Yeah. The savory stuff has a good margin too.
Right. It does. Yeah. Better than fruit.
Yeah.
Especially if you're buying local. Yeah. So that was a big deal for me.
Talk a little bit about your setup, Maura, because you're still baking out of your home and you don't plan to change that, right?
No, I don't. You know, I actually had started to think about a brick and mortar right before COVID, and I was very close to signing on the spot. And I just, that, you know, that little voice inside you? And I said, it was telling me, wait another year and see what happens.
Wow.
And then COVID hit.
Talk about some good intuition.
I was like, thank you, Jesus. Because that would have been like just a horror show for me. You know, it probably would have put me out of business. So anyway, you know, my kitchen setup, I have double ovens, and they're KitchenAid double ovens that I absolutely love. I love the way they bake. And I now have an area in my kitchen. When I first started out, I was in the kitchen and, you know, the kids would come home and my husband's like, I can't have breakfast here.
Yeah, because it was like everything.
Everything was every counter space, every table, everything was just like, you know.
Covered in pastries.
Yeah. So now I have this little area in the, in, I call it my back kitchen, you know, got a butcher block top. My husband built legs for it. And I ended up buying a dough sheeter for the cheddar pastry.
Okay.
Because it gave me tendonitis in my rotator cuff because it's so stiff.
Yeah.
And I ended up finding out with using the dough sheeter that I was able, I increased my profit because I would get out of the same batch of dough, I would get two more hand ties.
There you go.
So I was like, this was totally worth it.
You're like a machine.
Right. And now I also, just a couple of years ago, I purchased a, after another course I took at King Arthur, and the guy up there was like, I can't believe you do all this by hand. Like, you need to get a mixer. So, and I make a lot of chocolate chip cookies now, so I've morphed into other things.
Yeah.
But I bought this 12 quart mixer, and it's been, he was like, you need to get, you know, like a 15 or a 30 quart mixer or whatever. It was like, there's no way. I can't even hold that bowl.
Right. That's a pretty big mixer.
Yeah.
You can't move it yourself. You can't like.
Right. Right. So I bought this 12 quart mixer that is just perfect for what I need. And I don't use it. Sometimes when I'm in a hurry, I can use it for pie crust, but I really like the whole, I like that whole process of rolling
like
and
hand cutting the butter.
So but the cheddar pastry, it's a game changer. And for like cookies and stuff, it takes no time. You know, you can whip out a lot of key lime pies in that, which I couldn't before in my other, you know, mixer and stuff. So that was a good purchase.
Yeah. Well, all of these things you're talking about, I love it because you made a decision. You want to stay in your home. You don't want to have any employees. You don't want to do a brick and mortar, but you know, if you're going to make this make sense financially, you have to do a certain scale because we're a product-based business. So you have to sell more products, make more money, but how are you going to do that if you're just one woman? And so you've come up with all these efficiencies and made strategic investments in equipment and all that in order to scale.
Right. And you know, in prepping, people say to me, like, how long does this take you? Well, it takes me all week.
Yeah.
Because I make a lot of scones. So I get the butter into the, you know, to the flour and, you know, my mix, and then it's in the refrigerator. And I do the same with the pie crust. It's all in, you know, and everything is labeled, and I have bags and bags of stuff that, and I measure out, I get 50 pounds of flour in and I'll measure out for X amount of bags that I know I'm going to need for the week. You know, so there's always, I feel like there's always something to be done, you know, and then there's the labeling and all of that kind of stuff.
The packaging, because you individually package everything.
Yes, I do. And the Board of Health love the fact that I individually package it and I'm not pulling it out of, you know, and a lot of places do that. But my husband's very helpful with packaging for me, you know, and he actually takes care of like doing my banking, you know, getting my deposits in and purchasing things. I can give him a list now and I don't
get 10 phone
calls. Yeah, I don't get 10 phone calls asking.
He knows now.
Right. But it's like that, like I need an extra set of hands, but I've had employees before. And I can't, as a residential kitchen license, the only employees you can have in your business is people who live in the household.
Yeah.
So that limits you. And I've had a lot of folks say, well, you don't really, I mean, how are they going to know? It's like, well, I know. And if I have to send them off to the ER because they've hurt themselves, then.
Right.
And I'm not willing to take that risk.
Yeah.
Because I do want this to be successful.
Yeah. You know? And you're relying on it for income. So if you make a mistake and mess it up and get shut down, then that's it.
Right. Then what do I do?
Yeah.
You know, then I have to go to, you know, then I have to go to a brick and mortar. But I know what I, you know, I've gotten to know what I need to make every week in order to sustain the income that I want.
Yep.
And I just figure it out. And I have to tell you that before I took your pricing course, before I purchased that, and it was interesting because it kept coming up in my feed, social media.
On Facebook.
Yeah, on Facebook. And this was, I don't know if it was right before the pandemic, maybe, but it was in January. It came up again. And I said, you need, before you go back in the spring, you need to figure this all out because you have no idea. Because I was just pricing stuff. And I did a decent job. It wasn't like I wasn't making money, but I didn't really pay attention and I knew that I needed to. So once I took that and that first course, which was not very much money, I just priced out my scone recipe and I was like, okay, this is already paid for itself.
Yeah.
Because I'm not charging enough for my scones.
Yeah.
So that was like a real eye opener, you know.
And I remember talking to you about the pricing and you were like very nervous to raise your prices, that you would lose your customers or that people would complain or not buy things anymore. But that didn't happen.
No, it didn't. And, you know, and here I am again, sitting down with my prices and have gone over and, you know, updated all my ingredient lists. And it's amazing the difference in prices from a few years ago.
I know.
Like, unbelievable.
I know. You know? Yeah.
And I remember one time I was paying $5 for like 5 dozen eggs or something. And now they're like $21.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, it's just like ridiculous. But so I've got to raise them again.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I don't like raising everything all at once, but I
kind of do it in stages.
Well, you know, when you do that weekly sheet that I have in that entrepreneur, it tells you what your costs of goods are
and how much money you're going to make.
Well, yeah, right. But it tells you what your, not your profit, but each item, what it actually costs you.
Yeah.
So then you know that if you're in between the 20 and 30%, for your whole menu.
Right.
Because the small stuff makes a lot more. It's got a higher profit margin than the big stuff.
Yeah. And if you kind of balance more expensive things with cheaper things, that's what you got to do. Yeah.
Right. And that's been like, and that was also like a game changer that I didn't really realize that I just didn't think about.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Now you know, you have a picture in your mind of how much you need to do at every market every week, and you just execute And you know, if I follow this plan and I stick to this plan, I'll be able to pay myself.
Right.
And you don't, do you do markets year round? I remember when we first started talking, you always took a break in the winter.
I did. And now last winter, I started at the Hingham Farmers Market, which I didn't before. I was like, I'm not driving to Hingham, but it is, I'm outside. I set up outside there because they have a few of us that are outside because they don't have enough room inside. And it has been a really good market for me. I can't even tell you. I am just amazed that people still come out in Saturday, raining, cloudy.
In the winter time.
And people are, and I took in almost as much as I would during the summer.
Wow.
Like, I know, it's just incredible. But I'm getting a lot of, I've also been pushing a lot of orders.
Like, you know, pre-orders.
Pre-orders. I've been pushing a lot of pre-orders and stuff. So a lot of times I go to a market in the summer, a lot of times I go with half what I have is already sold. You know, this time of year, it's about a third of what I.
Yeah.
And I used to worry about what am I going to do with all of this extra stuff that I don't worry about that anymore. You know, I just don't, because I like know it's going to go.
Yeah. You know? So how do you pre-sell your stuff? Like at this point, you have a little more of a following. I know you're on social media. So what does your week look like when you come up with your menu and how are you going? What does that process look like for you?
You know what? It's very simple. I decide what I want to make. And that's kind of why I like doing this all to myself. I get to do whatever I want.
Yeah.
And I write it on a chalkboard. I post it on social media. And people order.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people will email me and say, you know, what are you making this week? I'm kind of interested in, you know, whatever. Are you gonna? I'm like, oh sure, I'll do that for you. But that's basically it.
So it's all you're selling is through like Facebook
and Instagram.
And Instagram. Okay.
Yeah. And I do have a website, which I did a few years ago, 4 years ago, I think now. And it was perfect timing because it was during the pandemic. And now I find, and I was taking orders from it, but I don't any longer.
Okay.
The only way I take orders now is for people to either call me or to email me, because that looking in too many different places was just
too much.
Way too confusing for one person.
Yeah.
You know, so I have a message that comes up on Facebook that if you're interested, you know, thanks for reaching out. If you're interested, this is how you can get a hold of me. And some people still do message me that way with something, but they don't get it because I don't look.
Well, but you're using automation, like a robot, basically, to tell them, like, I can't manage this inbox, but if you want to place an order, here's how to do it.
Yep. And this is how to do it. And they still leave a message.
Yeah, I know. People still leave a message. Like, I told you I wasn't going to answer you.
Then they'll email me. They're like, did you get my Facebook? I'm like, no, I didn't.
That's why the robot told you I wasn't going to answer you.
Right.
But it's good that they're emailing you and they know how to order. So this is really smart. Like if you're going to work for yourself, totally great decision. It takes a lot of headache off. You don't have to deal with employees or added expense and all the complications that go with that. But you do a really smart job of saying, okay, if I'm going to be by myself, I got to come up with systems or other things to do what I would normally hire another human to do, and try to do things in a really smart way. Like, I can't take orders through the website and through Facebook and through email and over the phone. I'm going to say, here's the one or two ways I take orders. If you want an order, come on over here and I'll take it over here.
Right. And I have, you know, people will say to me, oh, you should learn this. You could do this better with your social media. I'm like, guys, it's not broken.
Yeah.
So I'm not fixing it.
Right.
It's not broken.
It's not broken.
So I just run with it. And I also, a problem that I was having was I was sell out early. Because there's only so much I could do. So then, you know, I also do gluten-free little hand pies and cookies, but I started making cookies So, you know, I'll sell 8 or 10 dozen cookies in a market. And I started, the scones have really, like, I could be a scone person.
Yeah.
It's just,
yeah.
And then I have to think about how I pack my car and what's going to fit in my car. And it's always a puzzle every week.
Yeah.
And the puzzles, the pieces are going in differently every single week. But I had to, because I would sell out within 2 hours, and then I had to stay there. And I bring bags with labels, and I do that kind of stuff so that I don't have to do it at home. But that's not what I'm there for.
Yeah.
I'm there to sell. So
right.
I had to figure out what else I can make that would sell.
You know,
what else I could maybe do a little bit ahead of time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I started with the crostatas and the galettes and like that kind of thing that I can maybe bake off a day early that nobody knows. You know, it's not going to make a difference.
They keep and they taste delicious still. And
right, because you have to reheat them. It's not like making a blueberry pie or, you know, that kind of thing. So,
yeah. How many markets do you do in a weekend?
Actually, I have a market on Thursday. Now I've cut back to Thursday and Saturday.
Okay.
So I'm doing 2 markets where I was doing 3 markets before. And it was getting too much.
Yeah.
It was getting too much. And, you know, my husband was like, you're working all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to, you know, I had to think about, do I want to be working all the time? And I don't.
Right.
You know, now I have grandchildren. So there are things come up that you want to spend other time with. So
totally.
But I still am able to make. So I just bake more.
Yeah. For those 2 markets.
Right. Instead of doing 3 markets, now I bake more for those 2 markets.
Yeah.
And a lot of times think, what am I going to do with the leftovers? And, you know, I'm driving home and sometimes I well up because I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I sold all this stuff.
And there's never any leftovers.
I know. And you're so grateful. I mean, you know that feeling. You're so grateful to people that they like you and they like what you're selling.
And they let you like kind of live your dream, kind of do what you love and share it with your community.
Right.
It's humbling for sure.
It is absolutely humbling. And it's been amazing. Plus a lot of the people I've found at farmers markets, and I'm sure you find it, you know, with your shop, is these people, like I call them my farmers market friends.
Yeah. They really are like family, many of them.
Absolutely.
And you watch their kids grow up and you know, you're with them through hard times in life and celebratory times in life. And I'm like getting welled up just talking about this with you.
I know, but people ask me all the time, like I said, this is the best job I've ever had.
Yeah.
And I truly, you know, and they chuckle because like when I get over in my little back kitchen, sometimes I'm like positively giddy because like I just can't wait to get over there.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
I just love it. I just love it. You know?
Yeah. That's great. Well, you have a truly inspiring story. You've built the business of your dreams and it sustains you and is what you need it to be. And you still get to spend time with your grandchildren. I love that it's like a family affair for you guys. There's stories of your mom and your sister and your husband helping you and your grandkids. It's just, it's wonderful. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate. I'm very fortunate.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing your story today, Maura.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. And I have to thank you because financially, you've really kept me on track.
Oh, gosh.
And the holiday boot camp, too, is the other one that like I really like.
I love that.
I do,
class.
Too. I love being able to project. This is what I want to make. This is what I need to. And I didn't really ever think about those things.
Yeah.
You know? And now, I mean, I've done it for the past couple of years. And it works.
Right. And you're like, this is just a math problem. I just got to fill out the spreadsheet and go.
That's right. So
very cool.
Yeah. Well,
thank you again, Maura. Is there anything else you want to share with listeners who might be wanting to live this same dream that you're living?
You know, it's possible to, it is possible to live this. It really is. You just have to be very organized and you need to reach out because a lot of people are more than willing to help. People are more than willing to help. And it's very doable, especially if you have the space in your kitchen to do, to do it. It is a very, and I mean, I could certainly coach somebody on this.
Yeah.
It's just very doable.
Yeah. You know?
But there's a process to it too. It's like you need to, when you're making money, you got to keep your ovens busy all the time. So you have to know what you want to do. But right. I would say just to reach out to go to the farmers markets and talk to people.
You that know? Story that you shared about networking to find like the best markets and what are people's best money makers and busiest and all that. Right. You got to be doing that, like networking, talking to people.
And you know what? I'm still doing it. I'm going to do a couple of pop-ups that are like these wonderful pop-ups that because I can take in a lot of money, and I'm not doing it like every week.
And yeah.
So you just need to be like, my head's always going. You need to be thinking all the time. And but it's fun. I mean, I really obviously love what I do. And most of the time I don't feel like it's work.
You know? Right. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again, Maura. I'm sure we'll talk
thank
soon.
You. And thank you for all your help.
Of course. Yeah. We'll talk to you later, Maura. Bye.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye now.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Kitchen Notes. We hope you enjoyed it. Please be sure to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcasting platform so that you can listen in again next week. And if you appreciated the show, jump over to iTunes and give us a rating or review. It really helps make it possible for us to continue sharing helpful bakery content with you all. And for more information about starting and running a profitable bakery business, visit bakerybusinessacademy.com. Talk to you next week.